Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Ishmael Khawaja.
Hello, hope you're doing well. It's Monday the 13th of February. Thanks for downloading today's podcast. We start with our most read story at Kent Online. The parents of a Gravesend boy who died after being hit by a lorry on the A2 say they have no idea why he took his own life. 16-year-old Ikem Sadana was killed on the coastbound carriageway last September. Well, to tell us more about this story, I'm joined by our reporter Sean McPolian, who was following the inquest at County Hall in Maidstone. So, Sean, what do we know about what happened?
So what we know is Ikem Sadana's parents, Mr. and Mrs. Singh, went away to Paris for a couple of days with friends. And Ikem was staying at a friend's house with his sister, being watched by his friend's grandparents. And in the early hours of the morning, at around 3 a.m, he rang his parents, telling them he was feeling low and lonely, before going on to say how much he loved them. And Ikem's mum, Arshan, was initially obviously very worried and tried to calm him down, to make him feel better. And even advised reading some scripture before sort of hanging up and trying to message him. But then they began worried when he wasn't replying, so they rang family and friends, asking them to go look for Ikem to make sure he was all right, as he'd messaged saying that he was going to leave his phone and belongings outside in the friend's family garden. And then one family member or friend of the family was driving along the A2 when he noticed the police presence, and that was when he spotted Ikem's body on the side of the road. He said he noticed him and knew it was him by his curly hair, which obviously he was quite well known for, and that's when he rang Ikem's parents to tell him the sad news.
What did police find from their investigation?
So during the police's investigation, they didn't find any signs of sort of suicidal thoughts, low mood or depression from Ikem. He was sort of described as like a generally happy and quiet boy. He was a popular young lad. He had a good circle of friends. He had been in a relationship the year before, but I think it had ended due to exams coming up and sort of a busy schedule for both. But there was no sign of this sort of suicidal ideation. And they found on his phone there was a screenshot of his password as the screensaver, so that his friends and family could get into his phone. And then as the actual screensaver, when you logged in, was a note that he had left the family and his friends, sort of telling them how much he loved them and how sorry he was for what he was about to do, and that he just couldn't carry on anymore.
And so what was the coroner's conclusion, Sean?
So Coroner Alan Blunsden described it as a tragic case, but he said there was no other ruling he could come to apart from that of suicide, I think, coupled with the suicide notes and the call to his parents before, and sort of the apology for what he was about to do, that was the only ruling he could come to. But he did mention that it was a really upsetting and emotional case and completely unforeseen, and that Ikem's parents would have had absolutely no idea what decision their son was going to make that morning.
Ikem's parents spoke after the inquest. What did they have to say?
Speaking after the inquest, Mr. and Mrs. Singh described their son just as a kind, generous and compassionate young man. They said he was a loving brother, a devoted son, a person that got on well with everyone, including his family, friends and relatives. They said they're never really going to be able to come to terms with what's happened. Their life has completely changed forever following their loss. And now they've told kids, teenagers or younger people who are struggling with similar issues to speak out about it with loved ones, and just wanted to let them know that they are loved. And even though things are tough, they will be able to get through it.
Thanks for those details, Sean. Well, if you need confidential support on any emotional issue, you can call Samaritans on 116 123 at any time or get help on their website.
Kent Online reports.
Our other top stories today, police investigating a fatal crash that took the life of a teenager in Farningham. A VW Polo was driving along the A20 on Gores Hill on Saturday night when it collided with a Mercedes travelling in the other direction. The victim was pronounced dead at the scene, while another two passengers passengers are in a stable condition in hospital. Two men believed to be the drivers have been released on bail as investigations continue. Four teenagers have been arrested following reports a 15-year-old girl was sexually assaulted at a school in Dover. According to the Times newspaper, the boys are thought to be Afghan asylum seekers who crossed the channel on small boats last year. Police are investigating the attack, which is said to have happened last Monday. A Maidstone man who carried out lewd acts either from his front room or bedroom windows has been placed on the sex offenders register for 5 years. A court heard Daniel Vince from Dover Street was high on cocaine on at least seven occasions. The 38-year-old admitted all offences, including indecent exposure. He's been ordered to complete 30 rehab sessions, 200 hours of unpaid work, and has to pay £200 in compensation to a victim. And a Broadstairs woman who lunged at another woman with a knife, narrowly missing her head, has avoided being sent to prison. Yvonne Ellender waved the weapon and repeatedly hit a car. She tried to get it through a gap in a window in June 2020. The 36-year-old from Prince Charles Road admitted a fray and possessing a knife. She's got to do 150 hours of unpaid work.
Kent Online reports.
The Kent Online podcast been told any hike in the cost of a travel pass for school children in Kent could make it unaffordable for lots of families. The Kent Travel Saver Card currently sets mums and dads back £450 a year. Council bosses are yet to confirm the new charge, but it's understood it could be around £600. Well, Nicholas has been speaking with Mark Hood, who's a Green Party councillor in Tunbridge.
This is the second year in a row we've had an enormous rise in the Kent Travel Saver, because it went up to £450 last time, and we tried to stop that last time as well. And we managed to stop it for an increase for those who are in receipt of free school meals. But we haven't had the opportunity to even go down that route this year because nothing is as yet confirmed, as you say.
I was trying to remember how much the travel pass was when it first started. And a figure of kind of 150 was in my head. And that wasn't that long ago. I mean, it has seen a huge rise, hasn't it, over a very short space of time for parents. I mean, how do you think they would be feeling if they've got children perhaps starting secondary school in September, want a bit of independence and are pestering their parents to let them use the bus?
When the Kent Travel Saver was brought in under a different name, it was actually only £50. And it was such great value because children could use it at the weekends and there was unlimited travel. And steadily the prices have risen, and also it's proven very difficult because they've cut the terms of it, so you can't use it now at the weekend. So it's a problem when we're trying to get youngsters into good habits in using public transport, to have these kind of restrictions put in and to see the escalating costs. So it's going to be far out of the reach of the pocket of many families, because it's all very well protecting those at the very, very bottom, but what about those who are feeling the pinch because of the cost of living crisis? It's especially if you've got more than one child, it's going to be really, really difficult for people.
And how worried, Mark, are you that it may force more people back into their cars and say, well, in the long run, it's going to be cheaper for me just to drive?
I'm extremely worried. My division, Tunbridge, we've got an air quality management area in the high street, and we've got buses transporting children from across West Kent into Tunbridge, which is an educational hub, through that corridor in the high street. And if we see a dramatic increase, a noticeable increase in those numbers, because children are being brought in by car, then we're going to see more pollution. So it's crazy. The other consideration is a lot of the money from the Kent Travel Saver is actually going to support the commercial bus services. And if the whole system is withdrawn, then basically the whole thing falls apart. But what we really need to see is a complete change in regulation, in the same way that Cornwall has and Manchester. So you've got they've got a transport for Cornwall system down there, and it works really well. And that's what we need here. But the only way you're going to get that is by having a change of governance. So you'd either have an assembly for Kent, which we've been pushing for, both ourselves and the Liberal Democrats, or maybe unitaries, which we're not really in favour of. But something has to change, because we can't go on like this.
The pass allows children to travel by bus during the week at a cheaper rate than buying tickets each day. The court heard how a Herne Bay woman who was found face down in the street because she was so drunk had two children in her care at the time. Tony Ashby wasn't able to speak properly or stand up when she was found late at night in September last year. The 36-year-old from Queen Street in the town admitted being drunk in charge of a child. She'll be sentenced in April. Now looking elsewhere for a moment, members of Kent Fire Rescue are on the ground in Turkey, helping authorities there search for survivors a week after two deadly earthquakes. At the time of recording, at least 35,000 people were confirmed to have died there and in neighbouring Syria. The United Nations Relief Chief says the emergency response is now moving to the next phase, which is to get food and shelter to survivors. But rescues described as miracles are still being reported. Martin Stanley is a firefighter, usually based in Canterbury.
I've never seen anything like it. Complete devastation, people just broken. I don't think I can explain to someone with words what it's like. It's completely, a whole city completely devastated. It's unbelievable. My team, we were more involved in the assessment phase. So going around a specified area that we were given, just checking all the buildings. And then later on, I've actually been tunnelling through a building where we could hear a lady who was really deeply inside her flat that was about 5 or 6 floors high. And we just basically followed her voice and kept digging. And it turned out that she was with a gentleman as well. So there's two people in there.
Brad Rebeck is a crew manager in Deal.
I was lucky enough to play quite a central part in the first rescue we did with a 60-year-old lady tunnelling through the building. You don't think of it at the time, but to have actually made that much difference to someone's life who she wouldn't be here if we hadn't done what we'd done.
An experience I'll never forget, that's for sure.
And finally, Jim Chaston is a firefighter who normally works in Maidstone.
As you can imagine, it's pretty much a scene of devastation. It's a really large city that's almost completely devastated by the earthquake. The early hours when we were on the ground, as soon as they saw us on the streets, we were pretty much getting pulled here, there and everywhere, trying to find, you know, possible live victims amongst the buildings. We quickly found some. We had some really good early wins and some successful rescues. We were working in an area where actually a Turkish assessment team were quite close by and started talking to the lady D that was running their team, and she asked whether we were available to deploy out of our sector, that there was potentially a family that were trapped, that were making a noise. She provided us with a pickup truck that we managed to climb on the back of and sort of get over to that sector. It was really evident very quickly that they were alive. They were making noise and crying for help. We were fortunate that there, although it was a complete collapse, there was a void that was in that area that the local intelligence was saying was potentially their bedroom. We managed to get into that void and with some hand tools cut through some furniture and a bit of bed and find a natural hole that had been created by the earthquake, which was big enough to get the 2-year-old girl out of. Which was obviously, you know, that was a great success. We then had to concentrate on how to try and get that young girl's mother and father out. With a bit of hard work, over a period of about an hour and a half, we managed to make the hole big enough and the mother come out relatively easy. The father of the girl, obviously quite a bit bigger, took a bit more work to make the space bigger, but we did eventually managed to reunite the three of them, which was, I'm not going to lie, pretty emotional.
Kent Online News.
On our website, you can see footage of a car on fire after it had been torched in a suspected arson attack in Ashford. Crews were called during the early hours to a house in Adams Drive in South Willesborough, where flames were creating huge plumes of black smoke. Police believe it was deliberate and are appealing for witnesses. Meanwhile, firefighters have spent the night tackling a blaze at a block of flats in Broadstairs. It's thought to have been broken out in a garden and spread to the roof of the property on Foster's Avenue. 7 fire engines and a height vehicle were called, with crews spending more than 3 hours at the scene. Luckily, no one was injured. Now, there are questions over what will happen to Saga's headquarters near Folkestone after the company moves out. They've confirmed they'll be leaving in March after a change in working habits reduced the number of staff using the site. Enbrook Park in Sandgate covers 27 acres, including woodland, which can be used by local people. Tim Prater is chair of the parish council.
It was reassuring We've been in communication with Ewan, the chief executive of Saga. They've come back to us with some reassurance in terms of the ongoing use of the park, in that certainly while they retain ownership of it, it will remain open access as it is currently. While they retain ownership of it, things like the Sandgate Community Garden are going to keep their space there. And also Saga will continue to maintain it to the same standards, etc., as it is at the moment. But that comes with the while they maintain ownership of it caveat. They claim not to have made any decisions about what happens with it next. But it's certainly true that a lot of people locally have seen an awful lot of people wandering around up there with theodolites and survey equipment and things like that. There are clearly a lot of developers and or architects and they're sniffing the land at the moment and are trying to work out what could go on it. And there will be things which Sandgate doesn't want to see. There'll be some options I'm sure that people come up with which we would be happier with. We understand that if the site brings more footfall to the high street and things like that, that's a good thing. Certainly it's very self-contained as a build at Saga now. They do some outreach work into Sandgate, but you don't get lots of people coming out of the Saga building anymore and coming down the high street and eating and drinking in local pubs and things as much as they used to do when it used to have 1,200, you know, 1,000 people up there all the time and you were running out at lunchtime in order to do something. There's a lot less of that. It's much more self-contained. So there's some aspects whereby a different use of that site would bring more footfall and life to parts of the village. But there's a huge question on what that is, and you know, that shouldn't come at the loss of any of the open space. And it depends on the use that they're putting it to, and they're not giving answers on that at the moment. I think that's because they haven't yet made a decision, but I'm also pretty clear is that they will presumably, as a company, they're going to be open to financial offers, and the financial offers, the biggest one is likely to be in pole position, and the biggest one is, you know, it would be interesting to see who that is, but certainly most people are guessing now.
Pardon? Guessing housing.
It's emerged inspectors found mouldy chopping boards and dirty facilities at a Chinese takeaway in Maidstone. Jade Garden on Sandling Road was given a one-star rating after being visited in May last year, and staff were told they should have training on food hygiene. A follow-up inspection saw their rating upgraded to 3 out of 5. Major works are underway to prevent potential landslips at 6 sites on the railway in East Kent. Thousands of tonnes of earth will be removed from the banks around the track and nettings being set up. It means that buses will be replacing trains during half-term this week between Faversham and Dover Priory via Canterbury East. Chris Denham from Network Rail explains why the work is so essential.
We're doing a huge amount of work on the railway between Faversham and Dover at 6 different locations, the most notable of which is around Selling, where the tunnel cuts through the North Downs. The work we're doing is largely earthworks, and that's because the railway in this area was built on a mixture of chalk and London clay. And London clay is a spectacularly poor material to be building anything out of unless it's formed into bricks. So unfortunately, it's left us with a legacy of earthworks, that's cuttings where the railway's cut through the hillside, or embankments where it's built up. It's left us with a legacy of earthworks that are vulnerable to climate change, because with huge amounts of rain and then conversely very dry summers, it means they expand and contract, and we can end up with landslips in the winter and speed restrictions in the summer. So a lot of the work we're doing over this week-long period is shoring up the parts of the railway we know are the most vulnerable to make them safe and reliable for the future. You will see us removing some trees on the railway between Faversham and Dover, and that's trees that are a mixture of non-native species or species that are causing us a problem, either because they're soaking up lots of moisture from the track and causing it to become uneven, or they are at risk of causing a landslip themselves with their weight either on a cutting side or on the side of an embankment. We leave as many trees behind as we can, and the other important thing we do is we try and improve the biodiversity of the line side. The way we do that is by things like building log piles, dead hedges. We can leave tree stumps behind, and quite tall tree stumps, which we cut into with chainsaws to create bat roosts and bird roosts. And we're seeding wildflowers as well. So although when the work starts, you'll think, oh my goodness, this is, you know, what's going on? Actually, over time, as wildlife returns and as the undergrowth builds up, actually, you'll end up with a much better looking railway as a result.
There's a debate over plans to turn what's been called an ugly but well-used high street building in Deal into shops and flats. Developers want the original factory shop to become 5 separate stores and build 17 apartments above it. But a spokesman for the shop says they're hoping to renew their lease. Some residents say it would be a massive loss if it goes, but others think it looks tired and unkept. Elsewhere, an office block that was voted as one of the ugliest buildings in Maidstone could also be turned into flats. Coleman House was built in the 60s, and now developers want to convert the top 7 stories into apartments. Shops on the first and second floor of the building won't be affected. Now, a new £10 million control centre is being built in Gravesend to make sure the River Thames is ready for a rise in traffic. By 2050, passenger journeys are expected to increase from 5 million to 20 million. The Port of London Authority is making the record investment in the county in a bid to meet the demand and help vessels navigate the river. Reporter Alex Langridge has been chatting with Stephen Clapperton, who's from the authority.
This is a really, really exciting time for the Port of London Authority. We're about to commit to a £10 million investment to refurbish, build a new operations centre to control all safety of navigation and all traffic movements on the tidal Thames.
And what does that mean kind of for PLA and for the river?
This is one of the biggest projects that we've undertaken for the last 10 or 15 years. It's a big commitment from us, and it's about securing the future of the Thames as a number one net zero trading hub. We're really, really pleased to be here in Gravesend. We're committed to being part of the Gravesend community, and hopefully this investment demonstrates that commitment.
And obviously you mentioned kind of your Thames Vision 2050, kind of what are the key points in that and how does reinvesting in the building affect that?
Sure. We've just completed our Thames Vision 2050, our strategy refresh, and that tells us there's going to be significant growth in the river over the next 25 years. And so we're going to see significant increases in cargo, in passenger numbers and in light freight. So it's right that at this point in time we invest in creating a fit for the future operations centre to allow us to support this growing port.
And obviously you mentioned it's sort of the largest port in the UK in terms of volume, which people probably don't really know about. So kind of what comes and goes from the port and how do you guys kind of work in controlling that?
Yeah, the Port of London has been the biggest port in the UK since 2019, and it's our ambition that we retain the title as being the biggest port right through until 2050. So our traffic management function here at Gravesend is one of our key controls on safety of navigation. So we see large ships coming in internationally from all countries all around the world, bringing consumer goods, cars, oil products, all sorts of different products in and out of the UK. Alongside that, we have somewhere between 5 and 10 million passenger journeys on the tidal Thames every year, and we expect that to grow to around about 20 million by 2050. Alongside that, we also have a growing leisure sector in the tidal Thames. So it's a complex waterway, and the way that we manage that is through our operations centre here at Gravesend.
Big changes coming to the prestigious Canterbury Cathedral Choir mean boys will no longer have to attend an exclusive boarding school to join. Since the 70s, male choristers have been selected from independent school St Edmunds, but it will now be open to children from any institution. It puts the boys on the same footing as the girls, with bosses saying they're committed to progressing equality. Amateur astronomers have captured the moment an asteroid exploded into a huge fireball over the English Channel last night. The 1 metre rock was seen over Kent just before 3 a.m. and then burst into a fireball as it fell to Earth. You can see the video on our website. And if you're a fan of Call the Midwife, here's some good news for you. The show's been renewed for another 2 seasons, meaning it will stay on air until 2026. As you may have recognised, scenes for the period drama have been filmed at the historic dockyard in Chatham.
Kent Online Sports.
Football and Gillingham's run of 4 games unbeaten has come to an end following a 2-0 defeat away at Mansfield. Hopes were high with the Gills heading into Saturday's game off the back of 3 wins and a draw, but 2 first half goals quickly put the game to bed. It means the Gills stay in the League 2 relegation zone. Manager Neil Harris says while it was a disappointing result, Mansfield was the better team.
Mansfield are excellent. Mansfield are a team that's pushing for the top 3 where we want to be. Played in the way like we want to play. They're a good football team that can pass the ball, but they can also play forward and run forward. And I thought over the course of the 90 minutes, they were slightly better than us today. On my own team, second half, much better. First half, I just thought we made poor decisions on the ball. We talked talked a lot about today about both boxes. League Two is about a lot about both boxes. And first off, we wasn't good enough in both boxes. I thought it was a really cheap penalty for the first one. I'm disappointed with the result. I'm disappointed with the performance. I've got to be honest. I've said that to the lads. But the group's been fantastic for 4 weeks. And we'd had 10 points in four games before today. So I'm going to be careful what I say about my squad, because until now they've been excellent. And for us to keep getting better, we're going to now have to be better than we were in that first half today, for sure. I thought we were going to some good areas. Maybe didn't have enough quality at moments where we have done in the previous four games. We did have a couple of clear-cut opportunities where I expect us to do slightly better. Mansfield did well against us. You know, they handled us well. They were in the first half. They were certainly better than us at both ends of the pitch, and that's where we've fallen short today. I'm not too down. We've got a quick turnaround now. Look forward to Tuesday. Like I said, it's 10 points to 5 games now, which is a fantastic return for where we've been. A great opportunity for the fans to come and support us Tuesday night. Great following today. Thanks to everyone that come today. Amazed me again when I walked out and there were so many in the away end. We've been fantastic at home the last three games, and we want to, you know, put this result behind us, learn from it. It's important that I learn from it and the group learn from it, and where we can improve and be better Tuesday night.
As Neil mentioned, they next welcome 17th place Grimsby at Priestfield on Tuesday. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and TikTok. You can also get an update of the top stories direct to your email each morning with the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.